Hello and welcome to Clashy. We're discussing the classy and the trashy. Today our theme is Christmas ghosts, which is ridiculous, and I'm so excited. We'll be talking about A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens and the Hallmark movie, The Spirit of Christmas. All right, hit us with your facts, Chandra.
All right. Ooh, I never get to go first. All right. All right. So my name is Chandra, and today I went to the National Museum of American History and museumed it up like a classy bitch that I am.
So bougie.
So the trashy fact about me is that over the past 2 weeks, it's been finals time, and I have marathoned 6 seasons of Community and read over 300,000 words of Community fan fiction.
Yes, productivity.
Am I next? Okay. A classy fact about myself is that I recycle. Wow. Which everyone
Get it,
should.
girl.
That's something that a lot of people
Obviously.
do, but it's classy no matter who you are. A trashy fact. Well, here's a trashy fact. I've got one now. Just in general, I am a major stress eater. So I can burn through food like nobody's business, and it shocks my roommate to the point where she'll be like, "Did you eat all of that?" And I was, yeah. So I just, what was it that I ate the other day? Oh, I stress ate a loaf of bread yesterday.
Are we talking like a French baguette? Are we talking like a Wonder Bread loaf?
was it was homemade, so that's one thing. But it was
Okay,
a
that's
homemade
like
loaf of honey wheat, and I ate
yum.
it. I ate the whole thing.
I respect that.
Brenna had a slice, but she was just like she's lived with me for like a year, and she's still shocked with about the amount of food I can stress eat, and it's usually trashy food like a box of Little Debbie's, a bag of Taco Bell.
I have a very important question to Andrea.
Yes.
Was that loaf of honey wheat, was it high in fiber?
You know it.
Classy fact about Andrea, she is pro fiber.
Guys, I can't believe I haven't talked about this on the pod. Yes, I need a high fiber diet, and anybody who's known me for longer than half an hour knows it. So, welcome, listeners, to my personal life. Fiber is a great thing. Love it.
Great. That's wonderful. hi, I'm Sarah. A classy fact about me is that when I go home for Christmas in less than a week, I get to go see the Broadway touring show Anastasia with my family, and I'm very excited about it. A trashy fact about me is 1 year I found a very unattractive picture of me posing with a mascot mouse from a place called Grandpa's Cheese Barn, and I got it printed tile style on wrapping paper so that I could wrap all of my siblings' Christmas gifts with it.
Amazing.
Oh, that's awesome.
They hated it, and it was wonderful. Shout out to Grandpa's Cheese Barn somewhere in the wilds of Pennsylvania. Oh, first of all, happy winter solstice, everybody. Much like the Christians of old, I guess we are commandeering this pagan holiday to talk about Christmas. So, sorry about that. We just really like Christmas, you guys, and there's just a wealth of bad Christmas movies that we want to talk about. So, we wanted to sneak in another discussion before the year's end, before we have to wait again till next year. All right, but our classy thing we're talking about today is A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. It was published in 1843. Rumor has it he was going broke and was able to publish this story in order to save himself from being in debt, which is kind of cool.
Isn't that how Robert Louis Stevenson, isn't that how that worked out?
Yeah, that's true. Apparently it was quite the trend to be a starving author back in the day. So the story starts off with the sentence something along the lines of "Marley was dead to begin with," which is an amazing way to start a Christmas story, you guys. It's a story about the joy and love of Christmas, and it starts off in detail talking about how this one guy is super dead. In fact, dead as a doornail, which The author comments on, I don't know why doornails would be any more dead than coffin nails, which
I
hilarious.
I honestly live for that. I live for that line so much. And that's why I love Charles Dickens, because his words, like, he takes his time with a moment like that. And that's the opening of the book.
It's amazing. Yeah, it starts off, like, you're just like, oh my gosh, what? So, why is it talking about this dead guy? And then it's just meandering into this kind of aside about, why is it as dead as a doornail? Which I think, because that always used to bother me when I was younger, that phrase, because I didn't understand it. I think that it's the way that doors are constructed. If you, like, the nails are, like, bent in a certain way, so that they basically can't be reused ever again. I don't know. It doesn't matter. The point is, Marley is dead to begin with. So it goes into the story of Ebenezer Scrooge, who is this miserly, mean guy. He is hard as flint and solitary as an oyster, according to Dickens. Here's the thing about A Christmas Carol. It is, I think, a wonderful, wonderful story, and I think it might suffer from oversaturation. It has been told and retold in so many forms, so many times, and everybody kind of knows the gist of it to the point where I could see you being like, eh, it's not really worth reading the book. I already know what happens. But the way it's written is wonderful, and it's just such a good story. I mean, I looked it up, and after some intermediate Googling, figured out that there are... Andrea, do you want to guess how many... I know Shanda already knows, because I told her previous to recording. But do you want to guess how many movie adaptations of this story there are?
Oh my gosh. Are we even counting, like, the ones where it's like an episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch and they do a Christmas Carol episode?
Oh no, like, that would go into God knows how many.
But like movies like 25?
47.
Holy cow.
There are 47 starting in 1901. And the most recent one was the animated one in 2009. The most important one, in my humble opinion, is A Muppet Christmas Carol, which is one of my favorite Christmas movies of all time. It is wonderful.
It's amazing. It's spectacular. We love Muppets so here. Good.
Full disclosure, that's the one I watched for research for this one, because, as previously mentioned, Chandra does not read books very well.
Also, Chandra is finishing up finals for her first semester of her PhD, so Chandra gets a pass.
Yes. Also, the Patrick Stewart one is fantastic. But yeah, there's like so many. It's like there's a Christmas Carol for everyone. Oh, can I bring up another one real quick before you finish your summary? Because yes, it please. Ties into our last episode.
You mean
episode.
Before I start my summary?
So, you're right. You haven't even started. You kind of did. The nephew in The Christmas Carol is the most annoying character of all time. And I'm sorry, that's a controversial opinion. In the Jim Carrey Christmas Carol, that's super weirdly animated one.
Oh, yeah.
Colin Firth plays the nephew. And I'm like, miscast. So we can get back to the summary now.
Is that going to be a thing now? Sarah mentions Buffy. Andrea
mentions Colin Firth. Watch.
It had to be mentioned because he was so miscast. Like, why is Colin Firth playing this super peppy over... But, like, that nephew is so peppy. And he says so many things that are true. And, like, he's completely right in everything he says. But he just does it in the most annoying manner.
Agreed. I mean, listen, I love Christmas. I am someone who, like, feels I have to tone down my Christmas joy around people sometimes because I don't want to be, you know, like that nephew. Mm-hmm. So he is intensely peppy. Although I do love when, the story starts. Ebenezer Scrooge is this miserly, unkind, cold person. He runs what I assume is like some sort of real estate thing where he rents out homes to people. It's Christmas Eve and his employee is working and they're very cold office. And then his nephew comes to visit him and is like, good day, uncle. Merry Christmas. And he's like, bah, humbug. What do you have to be merry about? You're poor enough. And then the nephew's like, well, what do you have to be grumpy about? You're rich enough. And you're like, ha-ha, sick burn there, little nephew. But also calm down.
Yeah, calm down.
It does depend on the way he's played, though, because like I said, you know, with 47 different versions, he can be played much more, much less obnoxiously.
Most versions, I'm like, sit down, buddy.
So the early part of the book is basically just going through how Scrooge is cold and nobody wants to be around him and people kind of scurry away when they see him scowling on the street, which reminded me, My note is Scrooge does not have resting librarian face because I don't know if you guys have this experience when you're just like in a crowd of people and strangers will come up to you and be like, hi, can you tell me how to do this thing? And that happens to me pretty often. And it happened to me when I was with my younger cousin one time. And he's like, oh, you've got like resting librarian face. And I was like, I guess so.
I love that so much. I'll take that as a compliment.
So Scrooge does not have that. And he grudgingly gives his clerk Bob Cratchit the day off for Christmas. He turns down some people who ask him for a donation, saying that basically his taxes are already due enough to help fund prisons and poorhouses, and if people want to go out and die, then they could just do that and decrease the surplus population, and, you know, other fun Republican things. So he goes home, and when he gets to his door, the door knocker turns into the face of his dead partner, Bob Marley, which freaks him out.
Bob Marley? Bob Marley?
Bob Marley. There have been 47 movie versions of this story, and Bob Marley has not been in one of them. Oh my gosh.
I'm dying. I'm dying. It's too much.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm sorry. I mixed up Bob Cratchit and Jacob Marley.
Oh my gosh.
Into what I will now always picture as Bob Marley.
Imagining Bob Marley coming out of a door knocker.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, man. Oh god. So he sees the ghost of Bob Marley. Damn it, no! Take five, everybody.
Here we go. Buckle up.
Not Bob Marley, although patent pending on the licensing rights for that version of this movie. Scrooge walks up to his door and sees the knocker transform into Jacob Marley, his old partner, and it freaks him out, and he goes inside, but he still only lights one candle because he's not afraid of the dark, because the dark is cheap and he likes it. But he is kind of walking through the house, checking all the doors, definitely spooked out, creeped out rather, sorry. And he sits in his armchair and eats his, what is it, like cold gruel or like a slice of bread.
And the Muppets, it's a wedge of cheese and a hunk of bread.
I mean, not gonna lie, I've definitely had that for dinner on many occasions.
Also, that's a delicious dinner.
Yeah,
that's
like, right?
Also, depending on the cheese, it's kind of pricey.
Yeah,
I am a grad student. I am
student, so. You know how, like, when they say, right, like, oh, you only have bread and cheese for dinner, like, when you're in prison or whatever? And I've always been of the opinion that that is, like, a solid meal.
It sounds amazing. Oh,
like crusty bread, though, like really good.
Have you had grilled cheese? I'm guessing
his is like hard and weevily.
As long as it's got fiber.
Okay, well, we all know that Andrea cares about fiber. But wouldn't the cheese kind of counteract? It doesn't matter. Anyway,
it's true.
Oh, what is your guys' relationship to this book? Like previous to this podcast.
I try to read it every year because I think it's amazing and I love Charles Dickens. And I do think the first one I saw, the first version of Christmas Carol I saw was probably the Muppet one, and it holds up.
Yeah, I love it. It's great.
Yeah, it's a fantastic story and I love it.
I don't think I actually read it until maybe late middle school, early high school. I found like an old copy of it in my parents' basement and read it, and it is great. And I don't read it every year, but I read it pretty often. It is just, yeah, it's what, like 60 pages long? It's pretty short.
It's super and easy to read, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just really, really good. I don't know if the first version of it I saw was The Muppet Christmas Carol or Mickey's Christmas Carol.
Also an amazing one.
Also great. Also
another
great.
Another miscast nephew, though, because Donald Dunk is notoriously grumpy.
Yeah, he should have been Scrooge, right?
He should have been Scrooge, but then they just got this new duck anyway. And then he became his whole thing.
No, Scrooge McDuck is
Mickey
a real
doesn't
person.
Play Scrooge.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he dives into a pile of coins, obviously.
Yeah, but like they have an actual Disney character based on Scrooge.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. That's wild. DuckTales. Woo. All right, what about you, Chandra?
I really don't have any relationship with it. Not to be bah humbug about it, but like I wasn't an English major. I never read it. The reason I don't like this, the Christmas Carol, is because...
I'm shook, by the way.
I'm shook, too.
I'm shook, by the way.
I'm sorry. I can't believe I'm the Sarah in this situation. Two against one.
Wait, I love the Christmas Carol. What is happening?
No, like the Sarah in the situation, you know how it's two against one in the Grinch.
Oh, yeah.
So now
how you like it.
I'm doing great. Okay, wait, no, you guys attacked me for Colin Firth. Never mind.
That's true. No, that's true. it was bound to happen. But no, the reason I like it, okay, the way he's described on Wikipedia is as an older gentleman, or like an elderly guy. Why does it take until he's an elderly guy for the powers that be, the ghost or whatever, to decide that he needs a redemption arc then, not several years before?
I know this one.
You do?
I know this one.
Yeah, okay. I do too. Take it away, Andrea.
Because Jacob Marley was in love with him.
And he sees... Whoa, that's not what I was expecting at all.
And he sees
make it gay.
Ebenezer Scrooge is about, he's like getting old, and he's like he's dragging these chains around, and he's all like, I don't want the love of my life to go through what I went through, so I'm going to enlist the help of these ghosts to scare him into being good.
Oh my gosh, and maybe that's why Ebenezer Scrooge hates Christmas even more, because his lover died on Christmas.
Like, listen, though. It's like, it even says in the book, it's just like, he only had Marley. Like, they only had each other. Like, he was his only friend.
Oh. And I'm like... He refers to him as, quote, his particular friend at some point, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm mixing that up with...
Interesting.
At the very least, they were platonic life partners.
Oh.
Yeah.
But hasn't Marley been dead for a while before he finally comes back and is like...
7 years this day.
Yeah. It takes him a minute... dragging all of his chains around, feeling sorry for himself. Because remember, he's a dick, too.
He is a dick. There's a lot of dicks. Too many dicks on the dance floor in this story, let me tell you what. Well, in the book, it's basically... Marley's been haunting Scrooge ever since he died. And Scrooge hasn't been aware of his presence. And Marley's basically like, I don't know why suddenly I can come to you, but I asked if I could come warn you. So that you could escape the fate that I'm in. Which, really nice of Marley, by the way.
Yeah.
To come in and be like, hey, I don't want you to be in this horrible hell torture for the rest of your life. Because basically what happens at this point in the story is Bob Marley's ghost appears to Scrooge. He's covered in... Jacob Marley's ghost appears to Scrooge, and he's covered in chains that he forged with his misdeeds and greed throughout his life, and he's forced to drag them around in the afterlife. And what I really like about this story is, like, I think it's a really interesting, basically, morality for this universe, because, hold on, I'm trying to find the quote, that a person is meant to spend time among their fellow people and do good things for them and interact with them and try to make their lives better. And if they don't do that in life, then they're doomed to wander around in death, seeing all of the things that they could have helped people with, but being unable to help them and basically being burdened with this horrible regret, which, guys, that is pretty cool and pretty intense. And like, on the one hand, you're like, well, that's not really doing anything, because then they still can't help people, and it'd be better to have a morality system where, you know, you could actually improve people's lives. It doesn't matter. The point is, it's a pretty cleverly devised form of torture. If you don't care, if you don't bother to care about people in real life, then after death, you do care and you can't do anything about it. And I think that's fascinating.
It's so true.
And that's like... basically... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's so impactful that way, because this whole story is what you just said, and it's just this simple... beautiful truth that we as a human race still cannot understand.
Yeah, it's crazy because, and I think this is something that I don't like being preached to, and I don't like, I think a lot of people, especially like modern readers, kind of cringe at sort of blatant morality lessons in stories and whatever, which generally I understand and agree with. But it, yeah, like Andrea said, it'd be one thing if it wasn't something that people still don't seem to get, like, just be nice, just be a nice person. Like, okay, so he says early on in the story, you know, if the poor are gonna die, then let them do it and decrease the surplus population. And then after he sees, you know, Tiny Tim and all of these other poor suffering people, and he wants to help them, and he asks the spirit, like, well, can't we do anything to help them? The spirit kind of taunts him and says, well, let them die and decrease the surplus population. And it's just such a cool way of, like, humanizing the people that he was just like, ugh, they're just lazy and they don't deserve my help, basically. I don't know. And I know that's kind of preachy and whatever, but somehow it's done in a way that's like entertaining and kind of impactful. I don't know how else to explain it.
It's pretty heavy for Christmas, just saying.
Yeah, which is like why it's the time of year, like, right, for charity. And like, honestly, it's the time, it's always time for charity.
Yeah, seriously.
We live in Trump's America. While we're still kind of on the Marley thing, though, I want to share like one of my favorite moments. It's when like Scrooge is just seeing Marley and he's just not dealing with it well. And he's like, I'm not seeing you. And Marley's like, what the heck? Like, why don't you believe I'm a real ghost? And he's like, you may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are. And I'm like, this is the most British collection of before bed snacks I have ever heard of. Because I watched The Great British Bake Off and I'm like, I seriously saw Mary Berry put all of these into a pie.
We are really dragging the British this week, aren't we?
Yeah.
That was a compliment. Thank you so much. Also,
Mary Berry is a queen. Paul Hollywood is kind of not that great. Eh. But also, I can't help it. He makes bread and he has beautiful eyes and I hate that I am attracted to him.
Agreed. My theory about Paul Hollywood is he's a husky dog that somehow got turned into a human.
You're right!
Oh my god!
Is why he has gray hair, piercing blue eyes, and always tends to sniff things before he eats them.
Oh my gosh. You are right.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Paul Hollywood's listening and he's like, they got me.
Oh my god, if Paul Hollywood is listening, hello. I am so glad we made it big.
Also, Paul Hollywood, I'm sorry I said you were a jerk and that I hate being attracted to you. He's no Colin.
Couple things. One, Marley. Jacob Marley. I was talking to my friend Paul. This is years ago, but I remember it every Christmas season. Because I was saying something a lot. Like, I was like, oh yeah, like I really like... it might have been the first time I read The Christmas Carol, actually. A Christmas Carol. And I was saying that I really liked it. And I said something about Jacob Marley. And he's like, well, what about Robert Marley? And I was like, oh, that's not a character in the book. And he goes, but... it's Marley and Marley. Woo! Like in the Muppet Christmas Carol. And I was like, because in the Muppet version, they have, what's her name? Statler and Waldorf playing like fret or brother ghosts or whatever, when really it's just the one character. So that delights me. My other note is how terrible, like you're saying, kind of dark for Christmas. And also, if you really think about it, how terrifying would all of this be if it was actually happening? Again, with the oversaturation of the story, and you're like, yeah, he gets haunted by three ghosts. But can you imagine?
I know, that's what I kept thinking while I was watching this.
Yeah.
Oh no, my gosh.
It's terrifying.
But if you think about it, like, we kind of talked about it in our last episode with King's speech. But in this one, like, he also had a very truly sad childhood. And, like, mm-hmm, you can see mm-hmm. how he ended up the way he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he grew up poor, and because of that, he had to, like, work really hard and was basically separated from his family. Mm-hmm. And you see this, gonna skip ahead, Marley's basically like, hey, you're gonna be haunted by three ghosts. You have to learn from them, otherwise you're gonna drag the chains of your sins around in the afterlife like I have to do all the time. And he leaves. The first ghost comes. It's the ghost of Christmas past. The way this ghost is described is... it's basically, it looks young and old at the same time. And in the gajillion different movie versions of it, it's always interesting to see how they interpret this. The Muppet one is very creepy.
Agreed.
Yes.
The old school live action ones, it's kind of hard for the, I think they basically just go with like a robed figure. I don't know. So he takes him back to his childhood Christmases when he's stuck at school and his dad won't let him come home. You meet his little sister, who one Christmas is like, you get to come home. Dad's a lot nicer now. They fast forward to when he's a young man working for Fezziwig, and Fezziwig's throwing all these lovely Christmas parties. Yes, Fozziwig, the Muppet. And, you know, Scrooge is starting to care more and more about money. He meets this woman who he becomes engaged to, and then... they're really happy, and then the ghost shows him the Christmas where she breaks up with him because basically he cares more about money than he does about her. And it's a really sad scene because, you know, she's basically like, hey, you know, when we met, we were both poor and we were both okay with it. And he's basically saying, you know, well, I want to make a better life for us. I want us to have more money. And I still love you, so it doesn't matter. And she said, well, if you met me now, would you still want to pursue me, because you wouldn't gain anything from marrying me? And he basically is just kind of like, totally I would want to marry you still, babe. Wow. Unconvincing. Yikes. And so she lets him free of his obligation, and then he gets mad at the spirit for showing him this, and then he ends up back in his bedroom after his encounter with the first spirit. Any thoughts on this part of the story?
It's always so sad to watch that. Like, again, all of it is sad to see, like, these things that, you know, his past, his present, and his future are all grim at this point.
Yeah.
But, like, to see his love story fall apart. And, like, this is where you see him stop being, you know, this really idealist young man and turn into what he is now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think no wonder he doesn't like Christmas. Like, everything bad happens on Christmas. Like,
yeah, it's pretty plot convenient, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, didn't even Marley die on Christmas? Like, Christmas Eve or something?
Yep. 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 Yep.
Yep. Yep.
See,
yep,
guys,
yep.
I did my homework.
Yep. Yeah, you did. I'm so proud of you. Thank you. Okay, so then my favorite spirit, the spirit of Christmas present, shows up. He's basically like the Jolly Green Giant.
He's fantastic.
And I love him. He's like very jovial and friendly, and Scrooge is more game to learn from him at this point. So he takes him out into the world and shows him Christmas celebrations all over. Basically, you know, Scrooge sees people like of all levels of life enjoying Christmas, even if they don't have a lot. And again, this sounds very preachy, but listen, the way that Dickens does it is just... it's, like, enjoyable to read, and he goes and sees Bob Cratchit's family, and, okay, this is gonna make me sound like a terrible person, but the way that you feel about Scrooge's nephew, understandably, because I feel that way sometimes too, I kind of sometimes feel about Tiny Tim.
Oh my gosh, I saw that coming, and I'm like, are you serious? Like, I thought I was being a bad person. Tiny Tim is like, that's like saying in America right now, that's like walking out of your house and being like, I don't like Beyonce.
No, it is not. Oh my God.
You can't
never
do that. Like, that's so controversial.
Never. No, I know, it's so terrible, but, like, Tiny Tim would totally be that person in class that was like, I think he forgot to collect my homework.
Oh my gosh, you might be right, though. I hate that kid. Like, my example, that kid, there was always one of these in a class where, like, you would trade papers and have, like, your neighbor grade it. Did you guys ever
sure.
do that?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, then the teacher would say, like, the answer to number 14 is President Abraham Lincoln, and then some kid would raise their hand and they'd be like, what if they put Abraham Lincoln? And you were just like, can you please put your hand down for the rest of your life? You don't deserve this privilege.
Oh, you mean like instead of writing President Abraham Lincoln?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh God.
That
yeah,
kid.
No, see, I feel like that would be Tiny Tim. Because, like, okay, it's this one passage that sticks out to me where so Bob Cratchit's family's getting ready for Christmas dinner, and they're all really excited, and it's very sweet, and then Bob and Tiny Tim come home from church, which put a pin in that because I have something to say about that. But the mom's like, oh, how was he in church? And Bob's like, oh, he was so wonderful. He told me that. He hopes that people... Oh, by the way, Tiny Tim, pin number 2, is, quote, a cripple. He has, like, a crutch and a limp, and,
You're not helping yourself. He's...
No. Okay, so... I'm going... Oh, God, I'm worse than Scrooge. No, so Tiny Tim, they're like... Oh, yes, so he's like, oh, yeah, he's so great in church... He's told me that he hopes that people see him in church and it makes them happy because it'll remind them of who made blind men see and crippled men walk. And he's such a lovely boy for thinking these things. And I'm like, God, Tiny Tim. Was it just the two of them at Christmas Mass? Because I'm not a church going person, but I was raised Catholic and I actually really like going to Christmas Mass when I'm home with my family because then you get to sing Christmas carols and it's really cool. But... So we always go to the same church before we go to my Nona's house, and we always go to 5 o'clock Mass, and here's the thing, we magically, somehow, always end up standing in the same spot, and I don't know if any of you people out there go to church, or used to go to church regularly, but it's always more crowded if you're Christian on Christmas and Easter Masses, because that's when the lazy Christians show up.
That's why I hated it. Everyone would show up, and they'd bring their babies, and they'd sit in the sanctuary and not take them to the nursery, and then you'd have crying babies during... I hate it. I hated it.
Okay, so my family, we always just end up standing in the same, like, corner. And so one year, my mom's like, let's get there early. And we got there, like, an hour early. She's like, maybe we'll be able to get a seat and we'll listen to the music and it'll be fine. We got there, like, an hour early. And guess what? Just ended up standing in the same dang spot for an hour longer.
I can just see, like, the disgruntled merinos. Like...
And Mom, I know you're listening, and I know you're going to say that I'm exaggerating, but we got there a full hour early. She's going to be like, we got there like 15 minutes early. Lies, Mother. All lies.
Also, Sarah, you should talk your family into doing like a traveling like band and be like the Partridge Family, but you're the disgruntled merinos.
I mean, we have gone on several road trips together, so.
I think you're usually a happy bunch, but like I can just see you guys like for the church session being like, we just want to see Gloria.
Well, I think we're all just kind of shooting looks at our mom, but it's not like you can like get mad at your mom during Christmas Mass.
It's before Christmas presents have been opened, right?
Yes it is. It's before Santa Claus comes, so it's really like the final countdown.
Yeah.
I know I've been talking for a long time, but my second pin is this: what illness / physical affliction does Tiny Tim have? Because he magically gets better when they're not poor anymore. So one time, I was watching with my friends, and we're like, does he just have poverty? Like, is that the illness that he has?
That's it, he caught the poverty.
Poverty jank leg? Is that what he has? It's not just his leg, because obviously that's something more permanent, but like he like has a cough and he dies as a small child. And you're like, oh, what did he have that like his dad being paid a decent wage somehow cured?
Yeah.
Maybe a doctor for like pneumonia or something?
They like gave him leeches and he was fine.
Wait, I have an idea.
Excuse me, sorry.
I have an idea. What if whatever made him crippled, like lowered his immune system? So then when he does get sick, he can't go to the doctor.
Okay.
How's that? Lower immunity.
I like it.
Lower immunity.
I can deal with that.
Where were we? Okay, so, Ghost of a Christmas Present. Right. Tiny Tim is a sweet little boy, but oh my god, what a suck up. Anyway. Okay, so he goes around and he sees all these people enjoying Christmas in different ways. Okay, here's the part that really confuses me, and always has, and I don't know what exactly it... Okay, I'm just gonna read it, because I'm just gonna butcher it if I don't. So, as Scrooge's time with the Ghost of Christmas Present is ending, he sees... like a claw sticking out from under the robes of a creepy, right? This is probably the creepiest part to me, from like on the ground. So he sees like a claw and he asks what it is, and so the spirit reveals these basically emaciated children, right?
Yeah.
So Scrooge asks who they are or what they are, and the spirit says, the boy is ignorance, the girl is want. Beware of them both and all of their degree, but most of all beware this boy, for on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased. Deny it, cried the spirit, reaching out his hand toward the city. So, what?
Honestly...
What, like, are they, like, the embodiment of all, like, ignorance and want in humanity? But then what does he mean when he says deny it? I don't understand.
I think it is that is it. They're just like the embodiment of these two things that he's saying are bad, and it's dramatic, so they're putting it like in these children, right? The second part, say it again. The
beware most of all the boy, for on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased. Deny it, cried the spirit, reaching out his hand toward the city. Slander those who tell it to ye. Admit it for your factitious purposes and make it worse and bide the end.
Yeah, okay, that last part, it's too late. I'm not dealing with that right now.
This is gonna be the Aldovian scene.
I think all we can do is say, like, I think all you need to know is that ignorance and want are dangerous things, and that Scrooge is willfully he's willfully ignorant about the pain in the world and the want. So
okay.
That's all.
I guess, I mean, like, that's the understanding that I've always had of it, but it just seemed like such a weird way to portray that, I guess.
It is.
Because it seems like it's just a weird way to portray that, because if he's basically learning to, like, help people in need, and then he sees these creatures basically embodied as, like, wretched, starving children, you would think it'd be like, go to them and help them and feed them, but the lesson is no, stay away from them and ignore them, which is conflicting.
Yeah.
Whatever, it doesn't matter. Anyway, the time with the Ghost of Christmas Present is over, and who should show up but the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come? Not the Ghost of Christmas Future, you dum-dums. The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, because it sounds way more dramatic.
This is the coolest ghost of them all, because he's spooky.
Right, so the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come shows him first a group of men talking on the street about some guy that's died. They're really playing the pronoun game and saying, yeah, he's dead, that jerk's dead, blah, 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 so that Scrooge doesn't know who they're talking about. How does he not know who they're talking about?
Right? It's like, he's been told that, are you the spirit who will show me my future or something like that? And it's like, obvi, this is you, buddy.
I don't know, because, like, you're reading it, you're like, okay, you can kind of see how he's in denial. And then at the end, he's like, why would you show me these things if I can't change them, if I'm already dead? So that kind of makes sense. But it does not, it straight up does not occur to him throughout. Okay, so they show him these people talking about how he's dead. And he's like, oh, I know these guys. Who are they talking about? And then they show, the spirit shows him his dead body covered by a sheet in a bedchamber. And it's too dark for him to tell where it is. And he's too scared to look at the person's face. So I feel like he has an inkling at that point.
I think that's how it's played in the Muppet Christmas Carol. Yeah, I think it's played that he knows, but he's not getting confirmation, so it's like stressing him out.
Fair enough. This would be truly horrifying. He goes and the spirit takes him to see people who are selling this dead person's belongings. One woman who stole the bed sheets off of his deathbed, which, bold move.
Right.
The guy he's buying it is like, they're still warm. That's the only warmth he ever had in his life. And you're like, yeesh.
Yikes.
And then finally, the spirit takes him to see his gravestone that says Ebenezer Scrooge on it. And this is a pretty powerful moment where he's like, truly, it would be a very, very dark story if you find out that, like, okay, this is your fate and now you're dead and you had to, like, walk through all of these regrets and you can't do anything about it now, which is basically what happened to Bob Marley. I mean, God damn it.
Bob Marley comes to haunt you in chains tonight. He's like, how do
I have a feeling I want to haunt you and treat you right. I want to haunt you every day and every night. Okay, sorry. That's what happened to Jacob Marley. Okay, anyway, that's not what happens to Scrooge. He wakes up in his bedroom and he's relieved to see that it's Christmas morning and he has another chance. And then he goes and has a kid buy a turkey for Bob Cratchit, and he's basically overjoyed, and he decides to be a nicer person and give Bob a raise and help him pay out the mortgage in his house, and he goes through the rest of his life being cheerful and generous and giving and enjoying life and keeping the spirit of Christmas, i.e. the spirit of generosity and love in his heart, and it's a lovely, happy ending. And I have to say, I think part of the reason that I love this story so much is because, I don't know about you guys, but I am a very, very vivid dreamer, and a lot of times my nightmares are disturbingly realistic, so that feeling when you wake up and you realize that something terrible has not happened, I feel like he captures very well, Dickens captures very well in this scene where, excuse me again, whilst I search for my quotes, please hold.
I'll tell a story. Like, that happened to me one time. Like, we were camping, and my sister was sleeping next to me, and then, like, I had a dream where she was just, like, being really, really mean to me, and when I woke up, I was like, Tasha, you can't talk to me right now because I am so mad at you. And I wouldn't talk to her for like half a day because I was so mad.
Oh my goodness.
She always brings it up. She's like, remember that time where you had a dream about me being mean to you and then you were mean to me in real life? And I'm like, yes.
You're one of those, huh? So if if you ever have a significant other and you dream that they cheat on you, they're gonna just be screwed.
Yeah. Fun fact about me, I hold grudges.
So fun. What a fun fact.
Classy or trashy facts. Yeah, so fun. Noted. Yeah. Duly noted.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So, yeah. So,
anyway, no, sorry.
No, it's cool. But no, like, after, you know, waking up from a dream where something horrible has happened and you have that moment. So, this is just part of the passage. But it says, so he wakes up and says, he had been sobbing violently in his conflict with the spirit, and his face was wet with tears. They are not torn down, cried Scrooge, folding one of his bed curtains in his arms. They are not torn down, rings and all. They are here. I am here. I'm alive. So.
I do think that's, like, my favorite part of every one of the versions I've seen. It's just, like, happy Scrooge, like, losing his mind with happiness all around town, yep. Being like, buy that goose!
Yes! Buy the goose! Buy all the geese! Yeah. You know how people are like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. It's like Christmas morning. I bet nobody understands that phrase more than Scrooge.
Seriously?
Because it's like Christmas morning and I'm not in hell.
It's so true.
Any more thoughts on Christmas Carol?
I have a comment about the Muppet Christmas Carol that kind of leads into the spirit of Christmas. The Muppet Christmas Carol, in regards to set design and costumes, has consistency than the spirit of Christmas.
So true. This is going
to
be great.
I cannot wait to talk about that.
Do we want to do fanfic?
Yes.
Let's get fixed, Shandra. Yes.
Pick it up.
All right. Don't pick it up.
All right. Welcome to Fanfiction Corner with Shandra. Today's episode of Fanfiction Corner is canceled. You guys thought I was joking, but I am not.
Why
I canceled
did you
it.
Do such a thing?
Okay.
Don't tell them why it's so bad.
The Spinster Code says we can't kink shame, but I have seen things that I do not want to see ever again. Oh, I shared them with Sarah and Andrea in the group chat.
Yeah.
Because I am not
We've seen things.
Alone.
We've all seen things, and I get why you canceled it.
Listen, Listen, guys, this is a family podcast most days.
Most days.
No. Well, why don't we just put it this way? It's stuff that, like, it's fine that it's out there, but it's not something that Shandra wants to talk about on a recorded medium.
No. What if my parents listen to this?
Fan fiction is canceled today. It failed us.
All right, so that is why Fanfiction Corner is canceled.
So basically, Shandra, if I'm not mistaken, you tried to find some fun fanfic, and most of it had to do with ghosts having sex with each other. And wasn't that entertaining? Is that correct?
It was horrifying.
No, it wasn't. Okay, listen, I do have something interesting to say. Okay, let me start off with, I didn't even click on a story because I was not going there. It was either ghosts and Ebenezer, or Ebenezer and Jacob, Marley.
Uh-huh. Well, there you go. Andrea was right.
I was right.
Right. Or it was any fandom imaginable had at least one Christmas Carol, fan fiction.
Oh, well, that's pretty interesting. Oh, that's worth a fan fiction corner.
So everything from, like, the 100 to Harry Potter to Supernatural, all of them had, like, one. Okay. Oh, so then I tried to, like, narrow it down to, like, not crossovers, and there I only got down to 22. But I started, I started with 107, and then I got down to 22 by taking out, like, crossovers. Yeah, that's the word.
Guys, should I start summarizing this atrocity of a movie? Yes. All right. It's buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. So this is The Spirit of Christmas. We chose this for the pod because I had a wonderful, awkward movie night with my friends, and I watched it, and I was very confused about how a ghost can will itself back to life, and I was like, Sarah and Shandra, you guys need to watch this movie. I just about threw myself over the back of a couch to avoid having to watch this on awkward movie night, and then I made myself watch it again tonight. And I also was assigned the summary, which I don't even... This plot... is B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S. You brought this into our lives, and I have to say this is another one that since this past summer we have been, like, it's been on our list because Andrea brought it up and we were like, I don't understand what you're talking about. She's like, you just have to watch it. And she's like, wait till you get to the end. And guys, we'll get there, but what the what?
Okay, here we go. This movie opens with the first subtitle of Breathing Heavily, which is always a promising sign. We see a guy murdered in literally the most boring and bland way that you can murder someone.
Less interesting, sorry to cut you off, but this movie also starts off with a death. And honestly, the one in A Christmas Carol is more gripping.
Yeah, this was the most boring murder I've ever seen.
Also, he's hit on the back of the head, but somehow he ends up falling backwards.
I noticed that too.
It's like a pebble too. It's not even like a David and Goliath situation where you have some air behind it. It's just like this guy like knocks a pebble against the back of his head and we got this blood stain. In the snow. God. The time period at this point when you're watching it is ambiguous due to modern hairstyles, but we later find out.
And modern coats.
And the coats. We later find out it's the 1900s because they keep mentioning Prohibition. They may say a year, actually, but I can't remember because no one has made a Wikipedia page.
I know this one. Okay, so he mentions a specific act, and I looked up when that was, and it takes place the winter of 1919.
Oh my gosh, you're amazing.
Oh, girl, what a librarian, archivist, sorry.
I like the term information professional.
What an information professional. Can we just go ahead and describe him physically, like, off the bat?
Okay, so you remember how in our last episode we were talking about poor man's Tom Hiddleston, Simon?
Sure, yes.
My roommate course. Labeled this guy poor man's Clark Kent.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
And Brenna is really into eyes, so she kept talking about how gorgeous his eyes were, and I'm like, this doesn't save his acting. But you guys can go in.
I feel like Brenna and I would get along, because who was it that I had an obsession with their eyes?
Yeah. Oh, it was Daniel Day-Lewis. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I described him. I said he looks like the fiancé that beats up Rose in Titanic.
Ooh. Oh, Billy Zane.
I believe my exact note was, I like the way he dresses, but not his smug face. He looks like he would try to explain beer to me.
I feel like you nailed it.
Thank you. He's very hipster chic. He's got, like, the moron top haircut and,
Yes, that comes into my summary, too, the hipsterness.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Please proceed.
Oh, no. Please interrupt the summary whenever you will. So, flash forward to the modern day. Kate is an ambitious Slytherin woman who we see eating lunch with her boyfriend, who breaks up with her, but she is so savage that it feels the other way around by the end of the breakup.
That is probably my favorite scene in this movie, because it's the most likable that this character is, because this guy's like, oh, I really, you're a great girl, and blah, 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 blah. And she's like, oh, you're breaking up with me. Cool. Okay, great. I work too much. Yeah, whatever. Are you going to finish your food? And I was like,
this
yes.
is where I was like, she is my spirit animal. Like,
see, I feel like she was super mean. If that was like, if that was like a second or third date, I'd be like, honestly justified. But like, she was like, this was her boyfriend. And she's like, yeah, I don't really care about you. And I'm like, then why were you dating him?
Wait, I thought it was like her second or third
was
date.
Was it? I thought she said it was like her boyfriend and he was breaking up with her. If like, you're breaking up, like when I'm on a, when I'm on a third date with a guy and I don't want to date him anymore, I'm just like, let's not do this again.
I assumed by the conversation that it was just like an awkward second date. She says,
are you breaking up with me? That was a relationship.
Well, he seems to allude to all of her issues with like commitment.
Oh, yeah, fair point. You're not wrong. I wrote down, yay, a work obsessed white chick. We don't get that in these movies.
Classic.
Very often.
Yes. So she gets assigned the task of selling an inn for a dead lady with a cool name, Henrietta Forsyth, mm-hmm. and she needs to do it ASAP to avoid taxes before the new year. So she is the executor, and she needs to sell this inn, this Christmassy inn. And her boss is going to the Bahamas because why not?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Because plot.
So she gets an appraiser who acts spooked and bails on her. And she's just there alone. And then she runs into the most hipster modern photo of the dead guy from the ambiguous time period mentioned earlier. That photo plagues this movie. That photo
yes,
has so many formats. And it is ooh. Modern. Oh, it was rough. Okay.
Side note, there are so many newspaper articles and photos of this man in this house, like, after he died. So my question is, when did they put those up? And also, like, I guess maybe because it's, like, a touristy thing, I suppose. But
yeah,
since there are so many of them, how, when she finally later encounters this ghost, does she not immediately recognize him after staring at his picture so many times?
And she, like, mentions it. Multiple times she's like, yeah, you sure do look like that guy in that photo. And I'm like, mm-hmm. It's him. That's the same outfit.
Also, shout out to the movie gesture of picking up a framed photo and holding it in both hands and staring at it. I don't know if you guys do this when you're in other people's homes or visiting other places, but if there are pictures of them, I'm just like, ah, yes, look at that picture with my eyes that are for looking at things. I don't pick up this person's, like, glass framed photograph and hold it in my hands so that when I get startled I can like drop it or whatever. Anyway, go on.
So she talks to the owner and he tells her that the inn is closed from the 13th to the 26th of December every year because tradition, and even though she's a stone cold Slytherin, she's like, that's a dumb tradition, and he tells her it's because of mm-hmm. dead ghost man.
I would just like to say, for my own personal reasons, I get offended whenever anyone says the word tradition without singing it like Fiddler on the Roof.
Tradition.
Tradition!
Dun, dun.
Go on.
Tradition! Okay. So then she's like, I'm too much of a rom-com businesswoman to believe in the whimsical, so excuse me while I go to bed in full makeup with my bra on, because women do that in Hallmark movies.
I wrote Angie, I wrote down, oh my god, why is she always sleeping in her street clothes? Did she not even take off her bra? I'm so upset.
I'm like, why are you in a bra and why is your makeup still on? And the best part is, like, one scene later, she's like, because she's woken up in the morning and she has full makeup on, and then she gets out, like, a brush and puts makeup on. I'm like, you're putting makeup on top of your makeup.
She brought
it on a fucking bra. She probably did. She's like living in this world where she's like, yes, I do. This is my natural face, and my boobs just stay up in a bra naturally when I go to bed.
By Sunday, she's like seven bras deep.
Okay, so in the middle of the night, sure enough, hipster ghost man comes in and is like, I own this place, and he carries her out over his shoulder, and she puts up zero fight. She calls a cop.
She is into it.
He knows
it.
The code to disarm it. She calls a cop, and he says, listen, there's no one there. And then lather, rinse, repeat, still a ghost problem. What were you going to say?
I think my roommate caught the fact that the alarm code is the date that he died.
No! This is so extra.
Maybe they have to, like, lean into the whole thing because it is
right,
listed
that's the way
on
I
one
could
of the
possibly
haunted
like, mentally justify
inns.
The fact that there are framed articles about his death all over the house because I feel like if I died and my family was just like, oh, well, let's hang up this article about how you were mysteriously murdered, I'd be like, oh, man.
Oh, my gosh.
I wouldn't want to frequently remind myself of the date that I died.
Died, yeah. I do like their birth.
Maybe it
year.
Was. I don't know, because she just said, oh, I think that was the date he died, but I don't really want to go back and look, guys.
Like, also, he's totally living for this. Like, he's totally loving this angsty situation because it's like been 95 years and he's made zero effort to be
yeah,
a detective
he's like,
about
oh,
this
I never
situation.
Thought about trying to figure this out before.
He's like, I just don't know.
But, like, what did he try? Because as soon as she started asking around, like, they figured it out.
Yeah. Like, she's just like, so. She seriously asks him, she's like, hey, think about that night, like, one more time. And he's like, oh, wait, it couldn't have been this person or this person, because I was 100% looking at them when I freaking died. And I'm like, yeah, that would disqualify them, Daniel.
Oh,
congratulations. So he comes back exactly 12 days every year. He also can't go beyond the property line, and he is a solid-bodied man, and I'm not going to even try to make sense of ghost law in this movie, because some ghosts can walk through walls, and he's just, like, solid. And is this the time that you want to bring up your confusion, Chandra, about this man?
No, first I want to mention the ghost reveal and how, like, he finally convinced her, because I thought that scene was bomb. So, the innkeeper and Daniel are trying to convince Kate that he's a ghost. And in order to prove it, he drags her to the edge of the property. And once he crosses the line, he disappears. And since he's holding on to Kate so tight, she kind of like falls back into the snow. Yeah. And I think it's just a hilarious
That
scene.
Is better.
I just really liked
movie.
It. It was a good review.
And like she falls
She's
back.
Not as yeah. shook by it as you would mm-hmm. imagine, but I feel like they just had to like move it along as quickly as possible. Also,
very true.
Shout out to my friend Bill, who said that this is one guy she's not going to ghost.
That's good.
Also, I would like to say she throws shade at him for choosing a grilled cheese to eat when he comes back from the dead. And I'm like, yo, that might be the very first thing I decide to eat.
Yeah, it sounds delicious. So we have a mystery on our hands. And it turns out back in the day, Daniel loved this chick named Lily, who was also being pursued by his brother. And Daniel was a rum runner and did that with his cousin Harry to help save his inn and provide for Lily, who was like, wow, can you stop being a dummy and not break the law? Okay, thanks. And she's also like, hey, could you maybe be home for Christmas? And he's like, sure. But when he does, he comes back and sees her on a porch with his brother and he's murdered.
Right.
Right?
Couple of things. Oh, just at one point, he's reading A Christmas Carol, which shout out to earlier in the episode. And Christmas
yes.
ghosts, our theme.
Yes. And also, the first scene where she's in bed in her bra and makeup is very reminiscent of Scrooge, who wasn't dumb enough to wear bra and makeup
fair.
To bed, but her pores are going to be clogged. Also, shout out to my friend Paige, who watches Days of Our Lives with her mother. She says that this actress is the worst actress from that show.
Whoa, sick burn.
Thanks, Paige. Fun facts. So it turns out, yeah, Daniel's been around for like 95 years, and this is just my side note. Going back to the fact that he's proven he's a terrible ghost detective. And he doesn't know who killed him because he's busy angsting. So Kate's like, hey, I'll take care of this so I can sell this inn. And during all of this, we have a no chemistry forced romance.
Absolutely true. the one scene that they had to show that they have chemistry, they're basically like, hi, how are you? Wow, we really don't have anything in common. Great. I guess we're in love now.
Yeah, and we also get a shoehorn shirtless scene in which he's ironing his shirt because I guess ghost shirts get wrinkly too.
he's a physical yes. being at this time who doesn't sleep.
Are we talking about that great scene where he sits in her room and doesn't watch her sleep because that'd be creepy, but just sits in there and faces
right,
the
and
doorway?
He's like, I don't sleep. But he's alive, he's
it's
human.
It's like a real Edward Cullen moment.
Should we,
Yeah.
Yeah. Reverse Edward, which is a non-sex position, which is appropriate. Because he doesn't watch her.
What? The reverse Edward.
We lost Chandra. It killed Chandra.
It killed Chandra.
So, since we're kind of there, and we're talking about ghost physicality.
Here we go.
There was
and
some
vampires.
Discussion in the spinster group text today, trying to figure out, because do they bang it out in this, or do they just kiss? I think they just kiss in this movie.
Oh, they just kiss in this movie.
But, okay, you know what? Maybe we have to save this for the end, because it was the end kiss that made me think, what happens after?
First of all, I think she just... Oh, yeah, okay, so we'll talk about this at the end when we talk about how he somehow willed back to life.
Oh, God, I have so many questions about the end, guys. I have so many questions. So many questions.
Yes, yes. We will save the mysteries of the ghost
all right,
for
so
the end.
We have that forced romance, and, like, it's peppered throughout the whole thing, and it's supposed to be the driving plot. We also, because we need a B plot, there is a second old people romance
the only
on
one
the
I
side
care about.
With some forced chemistry. Because they're too lazy to write their B plot, so they're like, yeah, that's something I see in Hallmark movies all the time. It's like, we don't have a B plot, so let's have some old people fall in love.
Mm, so did they.
Yeah, it did. So, Kate is conflicted. She's conflicted because the first time ever, a guy is distracting her from her job, and her boss keeps calling her. Oliver is calling her, and he's like, hey, deadlines, Boston, promotions. And I'm cutting to the chase here. We find out Daniel's cousin is the murderer, who is also a ghost, but he can walk through walls, so cool for him.
Wait, I feel like we should lay out this scene a little bit, just so that people can understand how confusing it is.
Sarah, you lay out this scene.
All right, but you'll have to help me out with the details.
It burns.
So basically, she has to... He's only back on Earth in semi-human form for 12 days a year, and they're trying to figure out the significance of that. But in the midst of this, she gets called back to Boston? Whatever, it doesn't matter. She gets called back to city to, do some job, but then she decides that it's more important to be with someone that she loves for Christmas, so she comes back before he disappears, because he's gonna disappear at midnight on Christmas. They throw a dance at the inn in the old tradition of the place, similar to the dance that was thrown the night that he died, and then they're dancing, he looks and sees an apparition of Lily, the woman that he was in love with, slash engaged to, I want to say?
Yes.
So he follows her, and then he sees the ghost of his partner slash cousin, Harry, just kidding, and he has a conversation with Harry, wherein Harry's like, I'm sorry, I had to kill you because you tried to leave the rum-running business, and our shady boss didn't trust you not to rat us out, so he told me to go kill him, and I didn't have a choice because of my family, and he's like, I forgive you, and then he's like, great. So he shakes hands with the guy that killed him, and the guy that killed him just disappears, but... Previous to this, because this is the least confusing part of all of this, there was a flashback wherein he sees in flashback slash hallucination slash ghost appearing, Lily and his brother who they thought was having an affair, they're having a conversation about how like, Andrea, help me. Oh God.
We're both lost.
You were doing great. I'll take over. First, I'm going to back up a little bit and put a pin in where you stopped to say that it's revealed a little bit early on. Daniel, the ghost, thinks that Lily and his brother betrayed him while he was gone and got together. And that's why they got married shortly after he died. And that's where that's where it stops. But then later it's revealed through town gossip that Lily was pregnant, and it was a big scandal because the baby came too soon after the marriage to be the brother's, and it was assumed that it was Daniel's. So, Daniel doesn't know this, didn't know this, and he's very shook up about it. Okay, so we go back to the hallucinations, and I don't know, I think the brother is trying to comfort her, comfort Lily, because Lily's upset because Daniel's not there in the flashback. But he's kind of coming off like, give up on him. He's like, he's bad. He's like, once bad, always bad type thing. And then, so I don't really understand this part, because somehow he comforts her and like pulls her into a hug, and she goes to
this
hug
is the crux of it, but I don't think I understand said crux, because basically, yes, he's saying like, he's no good, even though there's really nothing to make us think that he's no good before he starts rum running, but whatever. So he's like, he's no good, he's never going to change. And then she's like, well, it would take a miracle, but what better day to believe in miracles than on Christmas? Then they hug, then Daniel, watching from afar, not knowing what this conversation is, gets murdered. And then are we supposed to believe that him coming back for 12 days every year is a miracle? Because it honestly seems more like a curse to me. And then once he figures it out, Lily appears and is like, you can come with me back to heaven, it's your choice, my love. And then he decides not to, and then to stay on Earth with what's her face. So may I read my series of questions?
Okay, yes, please do, because it's very, it's like, what is, why Kate Race? Why do you want to be with Kate?
Oh, yeah. Before we go to his decision, should we talk about her, like her decision to, so during this whole movie, obviously they're getting closer and closer, and they kiss a couple times, and then they kiss right before the Christmas Eve party or whatever. And then at the end of the party, she's basically saying, I'm sorry we couldn't solve, you know, the reason why you're still here. I'll wait for you, and I'll wait for you every year. And I don't care that it's only 12 days a year.
Honestly, I feel like the 12 days a year thing would work out really well for her, since she has commitment issues and she's really busy at work. Like, just to have, like, 12 days a year where you're just, like, with your honey, and then you just...
For sure.
I don't want to speak for Chandra, but is that... Yeah, I was going to say, I just feel like that's a really good asexual relationship. Well, like, it's like you get lonely, like, once a year for a short period of time, and you're like, yeah, that's when I have him, and the rest of the year, you're like,
I'm 12 good. Days of intimacy,
right,
boom.
Right around Christmas. 12 days of intimacy.
Just some light kissing, because we don't know if his body can actually perform.
Nor will it have to. This is Chandra's perfect boyfriend, honestly, except he's kind of a douche. I'll find you a nicer ghost.
For real. Yeah, guy who doesn't mansplain mixing drinks.
I wrote, what TF is going on with this ending? Did she peace out when they were kissing?
Okay, I'm going to pause real quick. Did you write in your notes WTF or what TF?
What TF in case a child finds my notebook?
I'm sorry, that's just so great. Right, okay, go on. What TF?
That's adorable.
Okay, so I think the she is Lily in this case. What TF is going on with this ending? Did she peace out when they were kissing? Did he turn her down? Does he not have feelings for Lily anymore? How is this a miracle? Why didn't Lily just appear sooner? Also, Charles sucks. Did the old, meaning the older couple, buy property together after one dance? And then I said, I think the 12 days thing would have worked out really well for her. Those are minutes.
Thank you.
I mean, it's very confused, because, like, she's like, okay, so she creates this miracle for him, so that what? Like, did she have any control over it? If so, what was her end game? Also, was she waiting for him to return to her? And then she's like, it's cool, though, that you fell in love with this other chick that you've known for a couple weeks. I've been waiting for you for 95 years, but maybe she's just real chill.
For real?
She's like, I died having her baby, but NBD.
Yeah. I don't know, I feel like she was giving him, she was giving Kate some side eye.
Question marks abound, really. It is the most confusing of a movie that I've seen in a long time.
It's just like, he runs out of the forest, and I'm like, why were you in the forest? Is he alive?
Yeah, and he was wearing a hat. Where'd that hat come from?
I can only assume that he goes on to become a trophy husband, because his only skill is mixing
of
drinks.
Not exactly so. That, but him adjusting to his new life, I guess. So at some point, the old guy who runs the inn is sitting with Daniel, and the guy's phone rings, and he goes, your special device is making noise. I'm like, son, if you know how to freaking operate in an alarm system in a house, and you understand how, like, cars and modern society, well, I guess cars would be, whatever. You could learn the word phone, is what I'm saying.
For sure. And he says so many things so strangely, and it's like, sometimes he's trying to say it with this, like, old school kind of accent, and he's not committing, because he just can't. Like, I have some quotes here. But this is one of my favorite observations. It just says, is he eating a whole chicken? Does he gain weight? Or does he do whatever he wants? Because that sounds like the opposite of a curse.
Seriously, you're dead, and I guess in Sweet Oblivion, whatever. And then you come back 12 days a year and get to enjoy all of the mortal pleasures, like food and sex, question mark? I don't know.
We don't know about sex, definitely food. He eats an apple with a knife with little chunks coming off, which seems like a waste of time in a dirty dish, hashtag grad school hack. Oh, he's one of those guys, too, that leans against everything. He's
we
like,
got a
let
leaner.
Me lean against this doorway.
We got a leaner.
Speaking of quotes, but that this guy, I particularly love this one, and I literally laughed out loud. I can't remember exactly where it is, but, like, that's before he's really, like bought into the idea of solving his murder. Or his death. And he goes, this is shaping up to be the worst Christmas since I died.
That did make me laugh.
All right, should we jump the shark and talk about our issues?
Go for it. Should I just read out our text conversation out loud?
A good place to start. Should we all just read it and read our voices?
Yes, let's do it. We are just reading a conversation we had earlier because some of us were confused about the anatomy of this ghost. What was working, what wasn't working.
All right, mm-hmm. So should we start with Chandra has 1,000 question mm-hmm. marks? Is he still a ghost? Dramatic reading, and let's set the scene. It is a Sunday evening, shortly before...
I'm going to edit out some cursing.
Yeah, save Chandra the pain of bleeping. Let's set the scene. It's a Sunday evening. We're all delirious from sleep deprivation for various reasons, and we're preparing to record this episode, and Chandra's watching Spirit of Christmas for the first time, and open curtains.
6:53 p.m. Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. Is he still a ghost? Question mark, question mark, question mark.
Me. Ghost laws make no sense in this movie.
It's ghost anarchy.
Not to be that person, but how does sex work? Like, normal or...
For him, probs. He can touch people.
Well, the kissing was normal, so I guess so.
Wait, does he have blood?
I think he's human for 12 days, right? But he also doesn't sleep.
OMG. Ghost anarchy.
This is the eternal question I have with vampire sex. Y'all, Angel... Oh, bringing it back to Buffy. Spoilers for all of Buffy. Y'all, Angel needs blood for some basic things, and also if he's always cold to the touch, like, no thank you, please. Obviously, which sex is better than ghost and vampire sex? Like, duh.
Guys, this one's gonna be a journey, so bear with me. There's something I read about vampire venom giving them bones. Science. Wait. Boner. Also, I just remembered he isn't a vampire.
Oh, thank God for that clarification about boner.
Welcome to Supernatural Sex Ed. Honestly, isn't the whole thing with vampires that feeding is basically their sex?
Yes, but then YA novels and TV shows were like, general audiences don't do that metaphor shiz, so let's have sex.
Listen, as a queer person, I've had to settle for metaphor sex and innuendo in fiction so many times. Willow, spoilers for all of Buffy, Willow and Tara doing magic, anyone? Kids these days don't know how easy they have it.
Okay, mine's got clapping emoji, so let me reposition my hands. So... We are team vampire sex, let it be known. Let people have their kinks explicitly.
Team sex positivity.
That sounds better than vampire sex.
All the same.
This is why we bounce ideas around in the spinster group. Branding matters.
Word.
Ha ha. So is this like our royalty sexuality scale?
Defining your terms is important in research. Shanda, sorry, what's your address again?
Andrea, but can the ghost have sex?
We'll have to discuss this on the pod.
For science.
And scene.
I don't know. I think we should go with the next scene, too.
I would like to say that I thought there was going to be a screenshot of your address, and it certainly was not.
Chandra, that was so funny. Chandra, what's your address?
Also, sorry, I'm so sorry. I did not see that. I was cooking dinner when you guys were talking in the middle there.
I'm so glad we did a dramatic reading of our text message for the...
Back up to this. Listeners, that's the conversation we were having, and we just don't know if ghosts have the capability to perform.
I mean, it seemed like that he had every other human capability, except then it threw me off when he's like, I don't sleep.
Does he poop?
I mean, I don't know. He does eat, so...
He does eat.
Right?
If he doesn't gain weight, he's living the life. He ate a whole chicken.
Listen, I know that you're stressed out about your stress eating, but I don't think you should worry too much about gaining weight. It's not a bad thing.
Thank you, Sarah.
You need it to fuel you through grad school.
That's what I've been telling myself for 3 years.
I've been telling myself that for 3 years, and I haven't been in grad school for 3 years. So.
Love our bodies the way they are.
Oh, God. Guys, where are we? What's happening?
We were talking about vampire sex. Are we done? Does anyone have any more Spirit of Christmas comments?
Let me flip through my notes real quick.
On my end, I think I'm done with this movie for most of my life. Honestly, guys,
I liked this movie. I think it's because I really related to the girl. Like, she was really relatable to me.
Okay, I don't have any other notes about the Christmas.
Oh, wait, I do. Archives to the Rescue.
Oh, they got back to her so fast with that information. I know, like, bravo
to them. Okay, so Sarah, do you want to give us a scenario?
I would love to.
You don't think of these prior, you think of them on the spot? Wow, I'm impressed.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Okay, so let's say you're already dead, you're a ghost, and you want to save your friend from going to a horrible hell where they'll be regretful of everything they did or didn't do and out their entire life. So you appear to them and you're like, hello, the only way you can escape this horrible fate is if you, without any further explanation, recommend one of these two things, A Christmas Carol or The Spirit of Christmas. The movie, not the concept.
So what you're saying is we're Bob Marley in this situation.
We're Marley and Marley. Woo. Okay. Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Okay. Christmas Carol.
Yeah, 1000% A Christmas Carol. Guys, it is so worth reading. It is very good. I'd like to say I'm worried that I made it sound like more preachy and awful than it actually is.
And I'm going to say Spirit of Christmas. Mic drop.
I knew it. And I respect your... I respect our differences.
Yeah, I respect our autonomy.
Yeah.
Your autonomy.
All right.
Guys, we need to keep a chart we of should. Our recommendation choices just for our own nerdy archival I'm on purposes. It.
I think this is the first time we haven't all agreed. Oh, no, wait. Treasure Island, we didn't all agree.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct. Shanda, would you like to tell the kind people where they can find us?
Sure thing. You can find us on Twitter at @ClashySpinsters. We're also on Instagram @ClashySpinsters. And you can find us on email at clashypodcast@gmail.com.
As always, if you want to do something super classy, you can rate us or review us. Or if you have already passed away and are listening to this as a ghost, maybe haunt your friend and tell them it's worthwhile to listen to Clashy.
Also, if you are a ghost and you're listening to this podcast, please let us know how ghost sex works.
Thank you.
Yes, but please don't do so by haunting me. Maybe haunt Andrea instead because Halloween is her favorite holiday.
Please don't make it explicit and I will accept. Don't be weird about it. Just tell me how it goes, okay?
Everyone out there listening, happy winter solstice and enjoy whatever holidays you do or don't celebrate. And we will be back next month.
Bye.
Bye.
Keep it clashy.
About ghost sex again.